Mitzvah Kuf Chaf Gimel, the 123rd mitzvah, which is related to the mitzvah that we just did 2 mitzvahs ago, which is the mitzvah of bringing a chatas when you do a sin, that for if you do it intentionally, the penalty is kares. If you do it unintentionally, the penalty is bringing a korban chatas. So we mentioned in that mitzvah that that mitzvah refers to a chatas that is set in price, that no matter how rich or poor you are, you always have to bring the same female sheep or goat, and that is your korban chatas. However, it did make reference to this mitzvah, the 123rd mitzvah, which is mitzvah's korban olev yored, which is a different type of chatas. It's also brought for the performance of certain sins. However, the exact type of korban you have to bring depends on your personal financial comfort. So the hakriv korban olav yored, that's why it's called olav yored. It goes up and down. So depending on how rich you are. Lakriv korban olav yored al chatoim yuchadim. So you, there's certain sins for which you have to bring this type of chatos, which is olav yored. Behim tumas mikdash, the impurification of the temple. Kolomar adam shutame ba'av hatuma v'nichnas lamikdash b'shkaga. That if you have become impurified due to an object which is an intrinsic source of ritual impurity, such as a nevela, an animal that died of its own accord, such as a dead sheretz, a dead lizard, or something like that. And you enter the temple with unintentionally. And this refers to, of course, the actual grounds of the temple being the azara, being the actual part that's really consecrated. This is not referring to Har HaBayis, which is just the Temple Mount, which of course we've read about a lot in the news lately. Is it permissible or not permissible to enter the grounds of the Temple Mount as opposed to the area where the temple once stood? And the qualifications for entering the Temple Mount actually are much less stringent. That the only reason you wouldn't be allowed to go into the Temple Mount is what you have, what's called a tuma hayotze alav migufo, not something you contract from the atuma that you contract from the outside, but a tuma that's generated through your own bodily emissions. So, for example, again, normal menstrual cycle of a woman, or if a man has a seminal emission, or they have unusual, maybe gonorrhea emissions, then that would also be considered to be a tuma yotze alav migufo. But if you don't have one of these, then you can go to Har HaBayis, even if you're a Tamei Mace. You know, the most stringent form of Tumah is if you have become Tamei due to contact with a dead body. So that you're allowed to, even though you're not fully Tahor, you're still allowed to go on to Har HaBayis as long as you don't have Tumah from what we call Tumah Yotzel of Migufo. So that's why, if you want to go on to Har HaBayis, into the portions that we know for sure are only Temple Mount and not actually part of the grounds of where the building and courtyards of the Beis HaMikdash actually stood, that's why you only have to immerse in a kosher mikvah, and even though that doesn't completely purify you, because you're still a Tmei Mace, because a Tmei Mace can only become purified by sprinkling of the ashes of the red heifer, the Para Aduma, even so, if you go to a kosher mikvah through and you become Tahor, you will remove what we call a Tumah Yotzel of Migufo, a ritual impurity that comes out of you emitting it as opposed to contracting it, then you're allowed to go onto Har HaBayis, onto the Temple Mount. And it should be noted also that, in other words, nowadays when a man goes to the mikvah, usually he's not so careful that he shouldn't have any chatzitza on his body. He doesn't tries, the best he can, but he doesn't check, because nowadays a man going to the mikvah is not such a big deal. It's just for extra kedusha, to extra holiness, or he wants to be makbid on Takanas Ezra, that we know that Ezra HaSofer made a decree that a man should go to the mikvah after having a seminal emission before praying or before studying Torah. It's a question exactly how much that's enforced nowadays. The minag is that really, this enactment is not enforced at all. A man doesn't have to go to the mikvah ever, really. Some say Erev Yom Kippur, it's an actual halacha that a man has to go to the mikvah. Some say it's not a real halacha. But in any case, there really is no case nowadays, according to very, very basic halacha, that a man needs to go to the mikvah. But in this case, it would be one of those that a man would, and if a man wanted to go onto the Temple Mount, he would have to check his body very carefully, that there is absolutely nothing that's going to be coming into contact, but coming between him and the water, his skin and the water, and adhere to basically all the halachos that a woman has to do when she has when she goes to the mikvah. I don't know, also a woman, you know, there's a takan of chafifa that she has to carefully wash her hair, wash and comb her hair, so if a man has short hair, it's might not necessarily that takana. I don't know, if there's ever such a takana for a man, but even if you assume that there would be, so it wouldn't really apply to a man with short hair. So maybe they need a mikveh man to stand there to watch to make sure all the payas go underwater because they might float to the top. Okay, that's a little ridiculous, but but a man when he goes to the mikveh, he doesn't need someone to watch because his hair is so short that if his head is under the water, what? Okay, so then you would need someone watching. But nowadays, it's very rare for a man to have hair that would be so long that actually be a concern that it would float to the top while he's going under. Normally,
for men, all sorts of men.
Nazir, exactly. But normally, if a man's head goes under the mikvah, then all his hair is going to go under the mikvah as well. Okay, so let's say you're tamei with an av hatumah, and you go to the go into actually the place of the Beis HaMikdash accidentally, then you have to bring a korban olev yori. V'tumas kadoshav gam kein shu tamei v'achal b'sar kodesh b'shgaga. And let's say you were also ritually impure and you ate some sort of sacrificial meat accidentally. Ushvuas bitui, you took a false oath. Kalomar shenishba lasheker al davar lasos o shelo lasos. You swore that you were going to do something or not that you were going to do something. Or any other statement of fact about which you take an oath and it's not true. Ushart stad ushvuas bitui hadu involver ale abishgaga. And you accidentally violate that. V'chein shvuas ha'idus. If you take an oath regarding testimony, kolomar shnishba lechaveru sheinu yodea lo edus. You say to your compatriot that you do not know any testimony to help him out, or in this court case, and you take an oath about that. And bein b'shogeg bein b'meizeh. That's one of the. It's an unusual one that you are required to bring a chatas, whether you did it on purpose or accidentally. A very unusual case over there. But even if you did it on purpose, that you swore falsely that you didn't know testimony about a particular court case, you have to bring what we call a korban olav yored. Al elu hachatoim chayev adam lahavi korban olav yored. Kolomar lefi ashro va'on yoshel adam. They're according to how rich or poor you are. Kemoshim v'forish b'kasuv. As it says explicitly in the Torah, shenemar v'nefesh ki sechata v'shama kol ala. And any soul which will sin and will hear a voice of an oath, kolomar kol shvua shishbiu o yoim yode edus. Again, the voice of someone administering an oath, if you know a testimony in a certain court case or not, im lo yagid v'naso avono. If you will not say the testimony, then you will bear your iniquity and you have to bring the korban. So finyan v'hevi es hashamu, you have to bring the sin offer, the guilt offering. In that case, it did not say you didn't know. You didn't realize. You were unaware of it. And in this case of korban shvuas ha'edus, it's whether you did it on purpose or whether you did it accidentally. I just realized an amendment. I wasn't advocating either position. Are you allowed to go on Har Bias? Not allowed to go on Har Bias. That's not not a topic of discussion. I'm saying it. I think the people who are against it say. Say we don't know the exact boundaries of where the Temple Mount ends and where the actual premises of the Beis HaMikdash itself started, but that's very questionable. We really do know certain areas which are we know pretty much for sure that they're certainly only Har HaBayis and not. But they want to say no, it's not whatever. There are different arguments whether we should still be concerned or whether it's more important to show our support, our possession of Har HaBayis by going up on it, or whether you should do that, even if it'll cause bloodshed or not. That's an important thing for the Jewish people to do, and we shouldn't be concerned that maybe people will react violently. Others say that you know we have to be concerned that people will react violently, and therefore we shouldn't do it. And there'll be then those people get attacked that that's an exilic mentality, and now that we are have our own land of Israel, so we have to have a different mentality. We have to show our position. Again, it wasn't an endorsement of one or the other position, but if you are going to go into Har HaBayis, I'm just saying that then you certainly do have to take these precautions of immersion in a kosher mikvah in a kosher manner, even for a man, because some men's mikvahs are rely on certain kulas that we don't, because they're not the halachos are not as stringent, because most of the time a man goes to mikvah, it's not actually halachically required. But if a man does want to go into a higher bias, he has to make sure to go to a fully kosher mikvah. That would be kosher for the immersion of women as well, or converts. Yeah, is the area on Har HaBayis, is the area that's actually kadosh with the kedushas hamikdash as opposed to Har HaBayis, is it actually outline. So I don't think that the Waqf would particularly like us drawing lines on the floor of their... there's no physical outline of where, but people know, they publish maps of, you know, of certain landmarks on our bikes, that if you stick around the edges or if you follow these things, then you're certainly okay. And people have gone many times, they know, they already know the route. Okay. Uchsiv betumas mikdash vekadoshav o nefesh asher tiga b'chol davar tamei, and in terms of going to the base of mikdash or eating sacrificial meat with in a state of impurity, v'ne'la mimenu, b'ne'mar ahakol b'sof ha'inyan behevi es hashamo. Again, it says in the end, you bring your guilt offering, v'lo ba'akasu b'fora shechiyuv ha'tamei sh'ne'mar imiyu b'hikansu b'mikdash o b'ochla basar kodesh. And it doesn't say explicitly that it's either if he goes into the Beis HaMikdash or he's eating sacrificial meat. This is the received rabbinic tradition that the meaning of this verse in the Torah is talking about this. Even though it's just the received tradition and not explicit in the verses, another place we did find explicitly that somebody who does this is chayav kari. So you do have, you know, if you do it on purpose, so you know for sure you have to bring a korban, if some sort of korban, if you do it accidentally. That if you eat from the meat of the shlamim offering, and you have your ritual impurity is upon you, then you should be cut off from your people. Because of Achir Omer B'tami Aniknas L'Mikdash, and then in another place it says that if an impure person goes into the temple, Ges Mikdash Hashem Timei, he impurified the sanctuary of God. So again, you're subject to the penalty of Karis. Achir Shenichta of Karis Biznodan Yesh B'Korban B'Shigigasan. You know that you don't get off scot-free if you do such a tremendous sin that's punishable with Karis if you do it on purpose. Then you don't get off scot-free if you do it accidentally. You have to bring a korban. We have a general principle that if it's on purpose, you're chayav karis, and if it's accidentally, you have to bring a chatas. And it says regarding... So in other words, so this other verse, Vehivies Hashamo, is used to, again, even though it doesn't say explicitly, it refers to these things that are missing their own... Rather, I can take that back. So we put it together with the fact that there's these other things that sort of sound like what it says in the explicit verse is Chayev Kari. So we say that the verse that says it has to bring this type of Korban Olaviyorid is referring to those types of Averis, which is Tumas Mikdash Vekadoshav. So V'chsi B'shvuas Bitui, and regarding a factual oath, O Nefesh Kisishava Levate Visvasayim, a soul which swears to express with its lips, v'ne'la mimenu, again, you did it accidentally, v'hevi es hashamo, same deal, you have to bring this korban. V'naim shechiyu ba b'korban olev v'yorid, so how do we know that this hevi es hashamo, they have to bring this particular type of guilt offering, is this changing price offering? Shekosuv sham b'parsha v'im lo sasig yado, it says very close by in the same pericope, that if you don't have enough money for to buy the full chatas, then you may bring a lesser form of chatas. Mishor sheha mitzvah kvar amarnu ki inyin ha-korban lahazkir ulahashiv ha-chote alibo b'choach ha-peula ki ha-heira b'masav. So again, this the reasoning behind this mitzvah is the same for as basic, the basic idea for the rest of the karbanos, is that the person bringing this offering is supposed to realize that he did really bad, so he has to give this up. He has to put out a lot of money to bring this to the Beis HaMikdash and watch it be slaughtered, etc., and he has to take to heart the message. V'shivakish mechila lakel al ha'asu. You have to ask that forgiveness for God after about what you did. V'zahir al ha'asid, and this also will cause you to change your behavior for the future, because it will make such an impression on you with the bringing of the korban. U'mechachmaso baruchu v'idiaso, kalus shekol b'nei ish u'miyu tavanosam v'dalus kocham, so since God knows that people are particularly not careful, that the intelligence of people is so light, so not serious when it comes to these types of sins. So he made it easier to get a kapara for them, because apparently they're easier to be nichshal in than the things for which you have to bring a real chatas. People are more likely to be do this rather than one of the other chatoim that have kares. Yeah. So, for example, one of the averas that you bring this for is different types of oaths. So we know that it's easier to sin with your tongue than with your actions. Now, if you're in the middle of, this isn't exactly what to bring this korban alviori for, but if you're in the middle of a juicy conversation and someone mentions Ploni, a certain person, and I really want to say it's a juicy gossip I heard about Ploni, it's much less likely to restrain yourself than if you, for example, in the middle of Shabbos and you're about to do something that's awesome, you're like, nah, Shabbos, I really shouldn't do this. You know, it's much easier to restrain yourself for those types of things, whereas the averas that have to do with talking are much, much easier to be nichshal in than averas that have to do with actions. So that's a sufficient reason that for the prescription of a korban olav yoreid for these false oaths. That improperly eating sacrificial meat or going into the base of mikdash in a state of ritual impurity is also very easy to fall into the trap. That the rules of tumah v'tahara are very difficult to follow. Can you imagine? You know, we don't practice these anymore nowadays, but a lot of times when you read about all the halachos in the Torah or in the Mishnayos, there's the sources that still talk about the actual practical application of all these rules of ritual purity and impurity. It's very complicated, and you feel like you sort of have to have OCD if you want to fully follow them. Although I assume in times where you know, I guess it's the same as any other halacha, really. Right, it's right, sure. I guess it depends even in the times of in the Beis HaMikdash, there were people who are more OCD than others. It's just like some people are more OCD about kashrus than others. It doesn't mean that there one keeps kosher, one doesn't keep kosher. It's a different attitude. But so I assume some people were not as OCD about Tumah V'Tahara. Okay, fine. But they still kept the halacha. So it was definitely, you know, the Torah doesn't prescribe things that are absolutely impossible. So, you know, it took a little bit of thought, but right, the same as for someone who never heard of kashrus, so that would also seems a little bit difficult. So it seems difficult to us, but even the same Rechinach is saying over here, still, it's a little bit harder than the other mitzvahs. Why? So if you want to stay tahor, because you want to go to the Beis HaMikdash, but let's say your best friend's throwing a party the other next day, and you know that your best friend is Tomei, if you go to the party, you're going to become Tomei. There's nothing wrong with becoming Tomei, but you don't really want to become Tomei at this point in time, because you have activities that require being Tahar, following subsequently. But it's hard to stay away from people that you know to be Tomei, just because you need to stay Tahar. So different ways that people could be nichshal regarding this. So you can understand for yourself how hard this is, but I'm not going to go at lengths to explain it right now. You're making the exact same points as the Sefer HaChinuch is. It's hard. Someone should write a novel or something from a real halachic perspective, you know, describing how what life was like back then. Right. Also, people would have had ways around it. It's like nowadays that people want to use the same dishes or milchiks and fleishiks, so you get glass dishes. So in the olden days, if you wanted to use the same utensils for tumah and tahor, you would get stone, because stone isn't makabel tumah. So you, again, the same way, you have it doesn't accept ritual impurity. So if you have these materials that get out of it.
I think they excavated a house which is near the Harabais, had stone kaolin in it. Mm-hmm. So they're like, this must belong to a coin.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, so for glass, so the Ramah is machmer, Ashkenazim are machmer for Pesach, not to use the same glass dishes for Pesach and for year-round. So some poskim extend that to maybe the Ramah means you should also be machmer for milchiks and fleishiks, but that's not the commonly accepted opinion, and that, in fact, is borne out by, in fact, reality. The glass is, in fact, not... does not absorb things from the food that's cooked on it or served on it, so it's definitely very reasonable to be, even Ashkenazim, to be lenient on glass dishes for both milchiks and fleishiks. Yisvardim are make leaven for Pesach. Svarim are made calling glass even for Pesach. Okay. Amina Shorish has Zeo Marnu, Shamarnu, Shakishalan Karo Binyanimela. From this reason that we said that it's easy to fail in these areas. So because these are things that's very easy to be nichshal about, so Shvua Sa'idos, an oath regarding testimony, is apparently the easiest to be nichshal about. So that's why God made it the easiest to have your atonement for that, because even if you did it on purpose, you bring this korban and you have your atonement. Because people have to offer testimony all the time, and people have evil inclinations regarding testimony. How so? And they might think, oh, did I really remember it that way? Maybe not. Maybe I'll say it a little differently. But they don't really feel like they're lying, even though they are, because they managed to convince themselves that they just misremember it. They might think that perjury isn't so bad because they're not actively doing anything to the parties. They're not stealing anything. We're not doing anything so bad. We're just going to say something that may not. It's because of false witnesses that somebody is going to suffer consequences, that they're going to be downtrodden and they're going to be falsely extorted. So they don't realize this. They just think, I'm just saying a little fibby, and you know, it's not so bad. Because it's so commonly violated and it's not thought to be so severe. It's one of the nice things that God does for us to allow us to have atonement for this, even if we do it on purpose. Of course, you have to take the message to heart of the korban and not do it again. You keep doing it every 3 days, and you keep bringing korbanos, then it doesn't hasn't really done its effect now, has it? People who understand people know that everything that God separates us from, even if He says there's a way to receive atonement for this, we shouldn't say. Oh, we can easily get atonement for this, so it's not so bad, but maybe we can do it sometimes. No, we still have to distance ourselves from it as much as possible. It's as if God's telling us, you know, this thing, I really, really don't want you to do it. But if you do it, so this is what you have to do. You have to repent with all your strength, and you have to place boundaries around yourself that you should never even get close to doing this sin ever again. And you have to bring a korban in order to fully more internalize the message. Still, it's not so gishmak, because he's l'maisa, he violated something that God didn't want him to do, so it's still bad. But here, it's like, you know, it's like saying not doing it in the first place is still better than doing it and having to make up for it if you do it on purpose. Yeah. Midine hamitzah. What are the halachos of the mitzvah? Shekol echad me'arba chatoi meile mechayev osei ulavi kisvo seira kedin chatas kivua hayadua. That the way, so somebody who does any of these four mitzvahs really has to bring a female sheep or goat, like a regular chatas, ve'inu niftar bofo kemach elim kenhuani. And you do not get exempted with a bird or with a meal offering unless you are poor. It's interesting that the way he phrases it over here, because I would have thought that he would say, well, the way this korban is formulated is that either you could bring if you're rich, you bring this, and if you're poor, you bring this, and if in the middle, you bring a bird. But rather, the Sefer Chinuch, the way he phrases it, is that really, no, it's the same as a regular chatas. Really, you have to bring the goat or sheep. But if you can't afford it, so if you're a little poor, then you can just bring a bird. And if you're really poor, then you can bring a mincha. So it's just interesting that he phrases it that way. Yeah?
What's the definition of poor?
He'll tell you in a second. Good question. V'imhu'ani v'hevi kisva o'si'ira lo yatza yedei chuvaso. This is fascinating. What would you think? You'd think that if a really poor person scraped together money, and he's like, I'm going to do this chatas in the real way. I'm so excited to bring this chatas. I feel so bad about what I did. I'm going to scrape together the money. Somehow, I'm going to afford a sheep or goat to bring the more expensive one. So what does the Minchas Chinuch, the Sefer Chinuch say? You're not Yotze. Mm-hmm. One does not fulfill one's obligation. You are supposed to do what you're supposed to do, and that's what God wants from you, and that's it. There's a place to be mahader and a place not to be mahader. If you can afford it, if it's good, if it's the place you're supposed to be in life, by all means, do extra mitzvahs, do the full way. But if it's really not what you're supposed to be doing right now, so then you have to be very careful about cheshvening. What is your place to do right now in terms of mitzvah observance? Think they had a lot of sheep. V'atam, v'ishachar shirichem akel baruchu alav uftaru b'chach eino bedin sheidchok atzma lahavi biyoser imash etasig yodo. And the reason being that once God says, for sure you're exempt, it's not like you really wanted, you really should bring more, but you bring less. You're not supposed to push yourself to bring more. You're supposed to do what halacha says. You're not supposed to do extra. You're not supposed to outsmart the halacha. You should understand from this another an additional lesson, which is not to spend beyond your means. If you spend your money on other things, even if you say you give too much charity, you're not supposed to give too much charity, because then when you're used to a certain lifestyle, let's say you can't afford that lifestyle anymore because you gave too much charity or other reasons you spent too much money, then you're going to either steal or you're going to have to bother other people to give you the money to wish for the lifestyle to which you are accustomed. That's also a very, it's an extremely important lesson. I would also extend this, by the way, to spiritual matters in terms of chumris also, that you have to assess very carefully before you take on a certain chumra or stringency, that you have to decide if that's where you are in life or not. If you're, let's say, spiritually poor, if you're someone who's just barely scraping by keeping all the basic commandments and you decide you want to take on a certain chumra or stringency, that's not appropriate. God doesn't want that. It's as if you're not Yotze with this korban. It's the same idea. But if you're a Rosh Yeshiva and you're really, really pious and you've been thinking about keeping a certain stringency for many years and you've weighed all the manners of how this is going to affect yourself and it's going to affect others, and you decide to know this is what you really have to do, it's really what you really want to do, then that is accepted. That is good. If it really reflects your inner piety, then chumras do have a place, and they're good. But it's people who somehow, a lot of times, people nowadays do them for psychological reasons or social reasons. So that's not acceptable. That's not certainly basically based on this. That's certainly not what God wants from you. And it's as if it does not have any positive effect whatsoever on your relationship with God. Yeah. It's like a poor woman who lives in the gutter, and she's wearing rags. And she can't bathe, and she's all dirty, but she scrapes together money for a huge diamond necklace with rubies. So if you're wearing all rags, and then she has this necklace on her around her neck, that's extremely expensive. It just looks ridiculous. It doesn't help her look at all. So the same idea if you're not spiritually there yet, and you're adorning yourself, so to speak, with all these extra practices that are not really appropriate.
It's an occupation.
Yes. But then they even out. That's a new BT is a different case, because you just get so excited about it. There is something genuine to that, more than somebody who does it just purely for social reasons or to be holier than thou. Yeah.
You said that Shlomo Kluger, only take on the level of chumras, the average from Balabas is a hat. Then you want to go ahead and set himself make things more difficult for everybody else and do Right, that he would say that if the average frum balabas would do this, I will do it, but I'm not going to go beyond that in being machmir.
Interesting.
He didn't want to up the ante for
everybody. Yeah, he didn't want to, basically make everybody else,
Well, that would be the visible things.
Yeah, the visible things.
Yeah. Right. Right.
The idea that privately...
Yeah.
I would assume that.
Right, that's like... There's a book called Minhage Lita, which is by a rabbi. Have you seen it?
I've heard of it.
It's by a rabbi. He's no longer alive, but he's a friend, the grandfather of a friend of mine, actually. But he was a rabbi in Baltimore, and he learned. He was born in America, but his parents sent him at a young age to learn in Telz, in Lithuania. His name is Rabbi Polakoff. By Menachem Mendel Polakoff. So he wrote this book because he didn't like the way Orthodox Jewish society was turning out. He wanted to write a book that expressed more of the authentic Lithuanian tradition. So he writes there that there was nobody in the yeshiva who didn't use the Eruv in Telz. Mm-hmm. So he said... He said that he doesn't know whether the Rosh Yeshiva themselves use the Erev or not. He doesn't know. Nowadays, who doesn't know who uses an Erev and who doesn't use an Erev? The Bachar and Yeshiva, he watched them. He didn't know if they, if the rabbis used the Erev or not. Probably they didn't, is the truth, but they to say that he didn't know, see, they kept it very under wraps. Mm. So, you see. Okay, Telz was a tiny little town. The Erev was much less problematic than it is in many areas nowadays. That's a different. I'm not saying we should judge from that to all different types of the exact same situation in different areas now. But you see the idea that really people who, even people who are of the level that they can be keeping chumras, are not really, don't need to publicize it. They asked someone also once, I think they asked the Briskarov, was it the Briskarov? I forget. I think it might have been the Briskarov. They said, did your father, Reb Chaim Brisker, wear Rabbeinu Tam Tvilin? He said, I don't know. So what do you mean? You were his son, you lived in the house, I don't know. So he said, the Shulchan Aruch says that you should do it if you want to wear Rabbeinu, it's not exactly what the Shulchan Aruch says, but this is how the story is quoted. So the Shulchan Aruch says that if you want to wear Rabbeinu Tam... If you want a Rabbeinu Tam Tvilin, you should do it privately and not publicly. So I assumed that if my father wore Rabbeinu Tam Tvilin, he went into his room, you know, at a certain time of the day to put on the Rabbeinu Tam Tvilin, but he didn't do it in a manner that anybody else could see. Anyway, okay. So that's our little drasha homiletic lesson from the Sefer HaChinuch, which is not directly addressing it, but a similar idea. Amru Gamkein Shemisha Haya Ashir Vihifrish Mos Likach Bahem Kispo Seira Behani Vitzarech Lemos. So let's say you were rich. Let's say Madoff had to bring a Korban Olivioid.
Stealing some more.
And then he already set aside in his bank account the money to buy this animal, the goat or sheep. And then he became poor and he needed the money. Yikach shnei torim o shnei b'nei yona, you bring the birds, you buy the birds, and you say, Harei hamos halalu mechulolin al ofos elu. So you say that all the money that I set aside for holy purposes should be desanctified through the purchase of these birds. And we do have this concept of desanctification of things at certain times. It'd be like, for example, if you have Maaser Sheni, which is the tithe, which is taken by the owners to eat in Yerushalayim from the produce of their field. So a lot of times it's difficult to schlep all your produce to Yerushalayim. It's a little bit, you have to fill up all your trucks with a tenth of all the produce and schlep it to Yerushalayim to eat it there in holiness. So what you do is instead you set aside a certain amount of money and you say the holiness of these fruits or vegetables should be transferred, should be mechulal to these coins. And then you take the coins to Yerushalayim and you purchase food there, and you eat the food with the holiness of Maaser Sheni. So the holiness transfers from the original produce to the coins, to the food. So basically here, the same idea, that you transfer the holiness of the coins that you set aside already onto the birds that you bought. And at that point, the money which is set aside for holiness had been set aside for holiness, becomes completely secular, completely becomes chulin, and you can use it for anything.
At which point does it become secular again?
You say, when you buy the birds, I wish to transfer all the holiness
from the money to the birds,
so
then the money is now
out right
there.
Same idea, if you buy birds and you became too poor for the birds, you perform the same thing with the meal offering, and you can use the coins. Same idea if you bought the meal offering and you got rich, So Mosif Aleinu maybe Kisba Osira. So you add to the money and you bring the animal, a she goat or a she sheep or a ewe. V'asher nikra l'inyanze kolzman sheyishlo. What does it mean being rich or poor regarding this offering when you can afford it, when you have enough money? So what exactly is the shear? It doesn't explain exactly how rich or poor you have to be. So it's probably left to the person's judgment, or which person would generally be thinking, can he really afford this or not? Fine. V'chiyuv korbanos eile davka b'shogeg. It's specifically if you do it not on purpose. V'shvus eidus afil b'meizid, even if you do it on purpose. Yeah? Anyway, but if we're talking about... So exactly how you define this, again, this is not exactly defined. Fine. Aval be'onus ein bochiyuv korban be'echad mehem. It only applies to shogeg, which is you do something unwittingly, but not onus, which is that you would have had... there's nothing else you could have done. This was completely out of your control. Right, so that would include something like Shekol Anus HaTorah P'taratu Mikol Chiyuv. That anytime you're an Anus for any mitzvah of the Torah, if you're completely Anus, then you are always exempt from any punishment as far as the Torah is concerned. So, for example, what would be an example of this? Which is, let's say, you're walking to the Beis HaMikdash and somebody looks out the window and takes a dead lizard and throws it on you, and you're like, "What? What was that?" And you just keep walking, and you didn't know what happened. It was completely out of your control. It wasn't b'shogeg. It was anus. V'chein be'inyan. I'm sorry. V'atzdadin shehin b'shvuas she'adam nikra ones b'henu pater o shogeg v'chayav. So, what's the difference between a shvua, which is called anus, and you'd be exempt, or you're considered to be unwitting, and then you're chayef to bring a korban olah v'yoreid? What? The person did not realize that he was swearing falsely. Thus, one swore that he did not do something when, in fact, he had done that thing. If at the time of the oath he had forgotten that he did and thought he was swearing truthfully, he is not liable for punishment at all and does not bring an offering.
In
certain times, you have to bring korbanos for different shvuas separately, or you can bring one for many shvuas as far as that's concerned. So let's say you swore five times outside the Beis Din, and you came to the Beis Din and you admitted that you did it, then you're pater, but if you did not admit that you did it, then you're chayv on each one. One who took an oath of testimony is not liable to bring the offering unless he denies knowledge of the testimony in court. Fine. But the oath itself, however, need not be taken in court. The case where one would be liable for an offering for each oath that he took is as follows. The litigant adjured the witness multiple times out of court, and each time the witness accepts the oath that he knows no testimony. Afterwards, in court, he denies knowledge of anything. Yeah, okay, that makes more sense. Page 456.
Oh.
In this case, he is liable to bring an olivieri offering for each oath that he accepted out of court. If on the other hand, if the litigant adjured him multiple times in court, he is liable to only one offering despite having accepted many oaths. The reason for this is based upon a law regarding testimony in court. When a person denies knowledge of a certain testimony in court, he may not subsequently change his story and submit testimony regarding that subject. We learned that last time. Since that would contradict his earlier statement made in court, he is therefore no longer considered a valid witness for his testimony. It emerges that at the time of the first oath in denial, he was a valid witness and is therefore liable for falsely claiming ignorance and not testifying for his fellow. After his denial, however, he is no longer a valid witness for the subject and therefore cannot be liable for refusing to testify. Okay, that makes sense. So once you swore falsely one time, basically, so then you become invalidated and therefore your future testimonies are as if they don't happen. V'chein b'inyin korban tumas mikdash v'tumas kadshav. That regarding the case of the korban for ritually impure while you go into the Beis HaMikdash or eat a sacrificial meat, hatzdod in sheish ben lechiyuv of the liftor, whether you're liable or not liable, tzadachiyuv hi yiyah kishiyesh lo lachote yedias hatuma vehekdesh o mikdash tchila vechein basof helam bein time. You have to know what you're doing at the beginning and at the end. Ketzah, let's give examples. Nitma v'yadash nitma, you know that you became impurified. Uval yado b'sar kodesh v'yodeashu b'sar kodesh, you got sacrificial meat, you know it's sacrificial meat. Obal likonis l'mikdash v'yodeashu mikdash, you want to go into the temple and you know that it's a temple. Shachshav yishol yediyah min hatumah min hakodesh b'tchila, first you know, yes, I'm tameh now, I'm impure and I want to go into the temple. Then if you, you know, you go on your merry way and you legitimately forgot that you were Tameh and you go into the base of Mikdash. Or also, equally, if you didn't realize, if you forgot now in the middle that this is sacrificial meat or that this is the Beis HaMikdash, let's say you're going to you're going for a little stroll in Har Abayis, like we were discussing earlier, and you forgot where the boundary was, for example. You knew at one point where the boundary was, you forgot where the boundary was, and you go into the you go in there while you're Tamei. Then at the end, after you did it, you realize, Oveh, I was Tamei, or Oveh, that was the base of Mikdash. Binyan Zem may be Korban. That's how you bring a Korban. You need knowledge at the beginning, before you do it, and at the end, after you do the sin. It was only in the middle that you forgot that you were Tamei, or that this was the base of Mikdash, or that this was sacrificial meat. It's a drasha from a pasuk. That you're exempt, let's say you became Tamei, and you didn't know that you became Tamei, then you realized that originally you became Tamei somehow. Binyan zeh hu pater mi korban. That in this way you're pater from a korban. You're exempt from bringing a korban because again you didn't know it all at the beginning. To be chayav a korban, you have to know at the beginning, you have to know at the end, and not know in the middle.